Hey, this is Elizabeth.
This is Keisha.
Hi, this is Leslie Sullivan, and welcome to the Mustard Seed Podcast.
All right, well, welcome back around the table, you guys, and Merry Christmas, since this is the day after Christmas, and we're just going to keep the Christmas spirit alive. And to keep on with Christmas, we're going to do something a little different. It's not in this succession as it should be, or as not as it should be, I guess. It's not a hard rule. It's more of a general guideline. But for the women of the Bible, we thought with the Christmas season, we wanted to look at Mary. So today we're going to sit down and kind of take a little look at Mary's life, because Christmas season always, obviously for good reason, always circles around Jesus. That's the whole point. But we need to talk about the woman who God showed favor to, who had favor with God. So we wanted to make sure her story gets told, and what better time to do it during Christmas?
There you go.
What I found was interesting when I was starting to do research on Mary is when I type in Mary in the Google search, I would get Mary and Martha most of the time.
Yeah. Mine came up the seven different Marys of the Bible a lot when I typed when I first did my search. I was like, seven? And I had to think about it. And like, I actually had to click on it so I could figure out which all seven were.
And it's like, wait a minute.
In my head, I'm like, I can identify like four.
Yeah, exactly.
Where'd seven come from? But it's a good number. You know, it's biblical. So
take you down the rabbit hole. Right. Which Mary's yeah. which and which one did what.
Exactly.
It was quite the popular name.
And for that, just for that early New Testament time, it seems like, because you don't see Mary in Old Testament.
No.
Not that I know of, anyway. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you mentioned, I think, when we talked about Miriam earlier, that Mary was also called Miriam.
Yeah.
So it's almost like
version of that.
Yeah.
Just a different.
That, or I wonder, this is, I don't mean this to sound as blasphemous as it might sound. Did the translators just get sick of trying to figure out what version of Mary this, like, or Miriam these names were, and just said, forget it. Everybody's Mary. If we can't figure it out, they're Mary.
It could be. It's kind of like, you know, the disciples went from, or, you know, the followers went from being like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to John.
James.
And Mark and Luke and
Timothy.
And I think they're just tired. And no, I'm just kidding.
It's like King James is like, we don't say these words anymore. So when we're going to go to full New Testament, we're going to change these. Like,
that's
we have
right.
to, we have to be that's able to right. pronounce these, y'all. So we start hearing about Mary, obviously, in the gospel. So in the New Testament, a lot of her story is in Luke. It's obviously Luke's the known detailer, right? He has the most detail in his gospel. But I always think of important little tidbit is, you know, God starts talking again. This is 400 years of silence. You know, he didn't show up as he did in the Old Testament for 400 years. And now he's shown up to Mary, and he's shown up to Elizabeth, right? Like, he's talking to them, and he's sending his Gabriel, right? His messenger angel to his head angel. I always feel like Gabriel probably is like,
He seems to be ranked pretty high,
yeah.
I would assume. I mean, he's the same angel who came to Daniel. So, a lot of prophecy, a lot of interesting tidbit that Gabriel brings.
He's like the most trusted. And I know he probably doesn't look like anything that we depict him as, but I always see him like as a bodyguard type, like big. But God's sending
with a big
him.
Sword.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he is strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I know too, Mary, everybody doesn't really know, you know, how old she was specifically, but it's common thought process that she was obviously of age. And in the Jewish community, that means anywhere between 12 and 14 when they become of age.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and so I think that's why a lot of people just split the difference and say, oh, she's just 13. You know, like she's 13 years old. That's her age. I'm like, gosh.
That feels so young. But in their culture, it was the right time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's the hard part is that we sometimes forget that, I mean, even as much as, I don't know, 100 years ago here, I mean, even in America, brides were 14, 15, 16 years old.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
I wonder if that, what that says about our parenting, that I don't think our 14, 15, 16 year old kids are mature enough to make those, not that those girls made those decisions themselves.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
But they were prepared for it.
Right. They understood the assignment.
Yeah.
And it was a different culture of, mm-hmm. of how the world functioned too. Not just family and parenting, but how the world functioned that we, kids quickly at a young age were working and doing chores on a farm and society was just very different in the mm-hmm. expectations of what kids were prepared to do at an earlier age than we are nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think back to when I was 13. Yeah. There's no way.
Yeah.
I was in my room listening to music.
The amount of magazine photos of boys that I had on my wall at the mm-hmm. age of 13 is disgraceful now, thinking about. And so I can't imagine being commissioned to be the mother of Christ at 13.
And she handles it so well.
Well, she is the epitome of, you know, you always hear about, you know, in Samuel, when God is calling Samuel and he's like, finally, you know, Eli had to say, just say, yes, Lord. And it's like, he says, oh, yes, Lord, here I am.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, she is the epitome of that. He's like, this is what's going to happen to you. And she's like, let it be your will.
Yep.
Let's do it. And that says a lot because let's think. I mean, A, like we said, she's 13. She's young. B, she couldn't, in their time frame, she could have been stoned for stuff to be mm-hmm. found full married because technically her and Joseph were betrothed, but they hadn't consummated the marriage yet. So they didn't have like the full ceremony. They had just, there was an agreement.
Yeah.
Which couldn't go on for about a year even before the whole celebration actually occurs and the consummation happens. But so for all intents and purposes, you know, she's married. They haven't had relations. And then, you know, so she could be killed for stuff like that. She's already going to be ostracized at the very least.
Yeah.
And she doesn't question God.
Yeah.
She knows that's exactly. Amazing. Yeah. I would have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I would need a signed document that stated I would make it through that whole experience.
I would just be like, are you talking to me? Like, I don't, are you me? What? I mean, no, I don't think you're talking to me. I think you're talking to the other Leslie/Mary down the street because you're not. You're not talking to me because that doesn't make any sense because I'm not ready for that. You know what I mean? I think that's because no matter what, she was still 13, but probably because of the way the scriptures had been passed down, the Old Testament lessons and all that stuff had been passed down, you know, generation to generation mm-hmm. at that point. I mean, because that was the only way they knew. They didn't read the Bible. They didn't read the Old Testament. It didn't technically exist. It was scrolls and scriptures mm-hmm. that were passed on and passed on and passed on and passed on and passed on. Mm-hmm. And so she's just following the laws and the thoughts and the hearts of the faith that her family has passed down now to her.
Yep.
And I think that just to me is like, I mean, I love what my mom and dad have done for me in my life to pass on faith, right? Mm-hmm. But can I still imagine, like, going, yep, okay, I'll be your servant, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I hope that I do that, right? We all hope that that's,
yeah,
that would be our response if he came. But it's still just, it's one of those unfathomable things in some regards.
Yeah.
You know, it's neat.
But it makes me think of, you know, like, she had faith like King David, because King David knew he was going to be king. And so, yeah, I'll go up against Goliath, whatever, you know. It's kind of like Mary. God told her she was going to have the Messiah. So it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah,
oh, you know, you talk about peer pressure that she probably was going through, you know.
Well, like, even throughout, they say, well, isn't that Jesus, the son of Mary and the carpenter son? Yeah. Like, it's never like, oh, isn't that the son of Mary, the favored one? Like, it's not really like a very uplifting way that they talk about her. Like, oh, that's Mary's son. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, in a. I found out too in the research that I was doing today that in the Jewish, the Talmud, and I practiced saying that a few times, and I know it sounds weird, but that's what it is. or Talmud, excuse me. There's no A. I put the extra A in there, and Steve said I was wrong. So it's Talmud. that she was a, because they can't deny Jesus's existence. Right, they know he was a real person. Yeah. So the Talmud states that Mary was a hairdresser and had an affair with a Roman soldier.
And named, then they hushed it up.
Yeah, named Panthera.
Wow.
And that's how Jesus came to be.
She was a hairdresser.
Then. She was a hairdresser.
I mean... Yeah, no. Okay.
I don't see anything wrong with the hairdresser part. She can do her what she needs
to
do.
Well, she can do what she wants, but I'm pretty confident that isn't the case.
No. No, I don't think so.
Because they also weren't in a place where there would probably be Roman soldiers easily
available.
Accessible, yeah. Yep.
No, they were in, I mean, literal... middle of nowhere. Like, Nazareth was like,
yeah,
worse.
I mean, they might pass through on missions or journeys or whatever, but
it was not a destination.
That's what I'm saying. That's really the heart. There wasn't a post there, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
Pretty much it was considered as Hickville.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it's
interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a thought and it just went boom. Apparently it wasn't important. It wasn't as important. I'm still trying to think of it, but it must not have been that important.
You're good.
So, like I said, we hear about her first in Luke. And there is thoughts by some, and I don't know who, by some scholars that state that they think Mary actually wrote, like, these first couple chapters. It said, first two chapters of Luke, because it is so from her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been that she actually penned it and not just Luke, you know, writing it down from her perspective, but it was actually her exact words because it was her that wrote it down. Which is kind of cool. I mean, if you think, I don't care if that's true or not, it's a non-salvation issue regardless.
Yeah.
But I mean, I thought, I'd not heard that before.
I hadn't either.
But if you think about it, even if she didn't per se write it herself, did Luke sit there and have her tell the story and write it the way she was telling it. Do you know what I mean? Like almost like a autobiography or our biographer, you know, when they sit with the subject and take all their information in and then try to write it from their perspective a little bit. Even if that's the case, it's just neat to think that Mary got to share her story the way not just she wanted to, but the way God wanted her to share her story. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, either way, it's beautiful to have her thoughts and her words, you know, in here.
Yep.
You know, you get going and you have her seeing, you know, saying, yes, Lord, I'll do as, you know, you say, as your word, you know. Yeah. And then she goes and visits, you know, her cousin Elizabeth, because that's what Gabriel says. Well, she's 6 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the one who comes before.
And I kind of think that's kind of God's way of giving a little bit of comfort to Mary. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, yes, Mary is a virgin. You know, it's totally different. But she can relate to Elizabeth because, you know, and that gives her a little bit more of someone to talk to during this really crazy time, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You know, you think back to being pregnant and how it feels, and, you know, you read all the books to know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And I just imagine she was probably a little clueless.
Yeah.
So I think part of it is you got to think about it too. When she goes to Elizabeth, that solidifies exactly what she's been told.
Yeah.
Right. So Elizabeth, without knowing anything, says flat out, you know, and I don't want to paraphrase it too terribly because I'm going to ruin it. Yep. So it's again Luke chapter 1, and it's verse 42. Elizabeth gave a glad cry and exclaimed to Mary, "God has blessed you above all women, and your child is blessed. Why am I so honored that the mother of my Lord should visit me? When I heard your greeting, the baby in my womb jumped for joy. You are blessed because you believed that the Lord would do what he said." So, like, she walks through the door and she gets just, you know, just that, those words spoken over her had to be a huge weight lifted off her. Like, okay, I didn't just dream this up. Yes. I didn't have, you know, a hallucination. I wasn't drugged and told this. I wasn't, you know, this solidifies exactly what the Lord said. Not that she ever doubted it, let's be real. But still, the feeling that had to be to have somebody who didn't know say that over you.
Well, and especially Elizabeth, who had waited so long for her own.
Mm-hmm.
She believed in the power of the miracles and God showing things that couldn't imagine and couldn't fathom. And I mean, that's the beauty of the story too, is that it was confirmation that this was divine, right? This was God calling her to this task. It wasn't a weird dream or all the things that could have been accused of her telling the story, you know, I mean, all the different ways people could have twisted it and turned it to make it seem like she was crazy or, I mean, anything. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, 100%.
And I wonder what Zachariah thought. You know, here he is, not able to speak because he didn't believe the angel. His older wife is pregnant, and then her cousin comes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just poor guy.
It's a good thing he couldn't talk.
Right. Right.
And maybe you guys know, how old was Elizabeth? Because, you know, it says she was advanced in age, but what does advanced in age mean?
Well, it's, you know, it's similar to Sarah in the aspect of, we don't really actually know how old Sarah was when she finally got pregnant, you know, with Isaac. But advanced in age meant out of childbearing years, technically. So, I mean, Is that the way we think of age today, which would maybe be like 50s, 60s, 70s? Or is it back then, was it 40s or was it 150? Yeah. I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I just think it in the classic term of not childbearing years, and whatever that numbers mean because of the way systems work and stuff like that. But
yeah, the numbers are different for everybody. And back then, I feel like their numbers were longer than ours.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But yeah, I would think she was probably more like a Sarah. Maybe not quite, like you said, I'm probably not quite that old, but.
Yeah. Same concept.
Yeah, like definitely maybe had stopped going to the tent as frequently. But yeah. I found I didn't know this either, and it's how many times have we all read Mary's song, right? Mary's song of praise. How many times have I listened to it in a Christmas sermon or any sermon when you're discussing, you know, Christ's lineage or anything? But I didn't realize that there are at least 15 references to the Old Testament that she speaks in her song, and that to me is another huge thing. It's huge because first of all, that shows us that we need to be in our word. We need to be memorizing the scripture, or at least knowing it, like we've talked about before. We know it's in there, we just don't know where. You know, but she knows her God. She knows her faith. She knows her heritage. She knows where she came from.
Well, yeah, it's the prophecies of the Old Testament coming true.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that had to be pretty neat to experience, just saying. But
right. Yeah, I do think it's neat because, you know, the boys, they were put through a school, you know, to learn Torah, to learn. The women, the girls wasn't, but she knew her stuff.
She did.
You know? And so she was very devoted. And she was wise because she could. To me, I think when I hear or like when I'm reading Psalms or how they use God's word in prayer, you know, or in worship. And that's what she was doing. And to me, to be able to connect those dots, she was pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The few that were pointed out in the sermon that I was listening to was that, you know, she references Psalms 34:2, Isaiah 45:21. She references Hannah's prayer, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that she references that in 1 Samuel 1:11. And then she references Leah back in Genesis 30. And I didn't write that verse down. But, and then she also, I mean, she references Psalms 111:9 and 126:3. Like, she knows her stuff.
And it's interesting because it all connects back to other women of the Bible. Mm-hmm. Their prayers, their worship, their... I think it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that either.
Yeah. No, so I was like, I said, like, she knows her Psalms, she knows her prophets, she knows her law, like, whether or not she was schooled in it, because again, she was a woman. So somebody either was teaching her or she taught herself, like, or she was going to the synagogue. She was looking up those scrolls. She was making sure she understood exactly who her God was and what he did and what he stood for, even if he was silent.
I think my hope is that her family was the one that was influencing, and like her dad was teaching all his kids at home. Do you know what I mean? Or in that nature, because for her to understand it so beautifully, I don't know that she could do. Well, she could do that. I mean, again, with God, all things are possible. But I feel like she had to have parents who were investing in that journey of sharing with her. but
yeah,
it's my gut.
I agree. I mean, I agree, because you can't lean on your own understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially as a female who has no, like, in that day and time, who had, per se, no right to be at the temple in those terms.
Right.
You know, for the learning, unless she could sneak in on the sides and, you know, do that kind of stuff, which would be cool too. But I really feel like it just feels like Mary's family, who, you know, doesn't get mentioned at all, you know, before Joseph and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But they had to obviously be super supportive, because if not, she should have been killed or should have been, you know, removed from the family.
Right.
For getting pregnant without being married, you know. And so I just feel like the family also went, this is all part of this prophecy. This is all part of mm-hmm. God's plan. And we're with, you know, like, we believe it. And they had, that means they all had to be in some form of knowledge. That's my gut.
I agree. I think a lot of it probably was, some of it at least, was her family. It was her, mm-hmm. her wisdom that, and her ability to learn and
yes.
to recall
yes.
says a lot, because she's obviously stronger than yeah. I am in faith. You know,
or she just has a better brain.
Yes, yeah, definitely has a much better yeah. brain than I do.
And me too, girl.
100%. I also heard, I had a few epiphanies today. Like, not epiphanies, but things are like just not, like, I'm like, huh. Again, non-salvation issues. But I heard that the genealogy that's in Luke 3 for, like, the line of Jesus
mm-hmm.
was actually Mary's. And then one of Matthew was actually Joseph's.
Mm. They can't be that far off, though.
No, they're both from the line of David, which,
yeah.
again, considering how many wives that man had, cannot be hard in that day and time. Everybody probably had a little bit of David in their bloodline.
Yeah.
Because between David and Solomon, I'm pretty sure those that bloodline, like, that went that way through Bathsheba was pretty big.
Yeah.
Because he had... No, I know Solomon had other wives that were of other religions, but still.
It's a lot.
That's a lot. And, like, does that make it line of David still? You know, like, does that make... if they're coming
does
from
that
a...
make, I mean, but that makes sense, because when you read the Matthew... The end of Matthew, like Matthew 1:16, says Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and then Mary gave birth to Jesus, who is called the Messiah. So Mary's the last one named in that Matthew genealogy. And then in the Luke genealogy, Joseph's the first one mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That would make sense if that was, and there's some slightly different pieces to that. That's why it looks like Joseph was from Levi. And Mary was from Judah.
Hmm.
So that's kind of interesting, too.
Yeah. So regardless, they both came from...
I mean,
I always sit there in church, and Steve always glares at me every time. Everybody says, well, she came from the line of David through... Or he came through the line of David through Joseph. And I'm like, no.
And Mary. And
yeah.
Mary.
And I'm sitting there back, and Steve's like, just shut up. You know, because my face just goes... you know? I want to, like, raise my hand, just so we're clear. Hello.
yeah.
But yeah. I did also hear that a lot of times when you're adopted, like when you're adopted into a family, your lineage is automatically your adopted father's. So mm-hmm. like it actually almost means more. So there is that too. But it I still stand pretty firm on my little soapbox that she was also a part of the line of David. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I know it's a non-salvation issue again, but that is my opinion, and I like it.
And I'm sticking to it. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
Right. Yeah, and I think, so we talk about, you know, her wisdom. We talk about how her faith, her ability to step out and say, yes, Lord. And I just think she's, you know, you talk about the Proverbs 31 woman, and I don't know all of, you know, we don't know a lot of what Mary did or, you know, continued to. We don't see her more as a wife, but we see the epitome of what a mother looks like, you know, and how you should, as a woman of God, how you're supposed to respond when God calls you. And Doug was talking about it this week, about how God doesn't always call you at the most most opportune moments. You know, but God calls you at the timing that he wants you to be called at. He doesn't tell you to speak to somebody if he doesn't mean that moment, or if he doesn't mean then or the next time you see him. It's not like, okay, God, I'll get to it. I'll do it. No, it's that you're doing this now, and this is how you follow me. And God's never asked me to birth the savior of the world. There's reasons, and I'm pretty sure I could name them. You know, what is it? Confessing your sins? Should we? You know? But I mean, she just, knowing everything that could happen to her, but having that faith that it's not going to, you know, to step out for that. And, you know, it even though she was favored with God, heard a quote today that said, favor of God means service and not status. Like, she wasn't, just because she's favored didn't mean that she was free of trials. It didn't mean that she didn't have to do anything else. I mean, she had trials. She had trials. Yeah. She, you know, sounds from scriptural, because Joseph kind of drops off the face of scripture after the whole Christmas story. You don't hear much of him after they lose Messiah.
You know? Can you imagine?
No.
False Messiah.
Absolutely not. Oh my gosh.
You know, when our oldest son was like 18 months old, we lost him at church once. The way our church was at the time was the main sanctuary was in a different building than the children's sanctuary, and they communicated by radio. Well, my husband went to get the radio from the children's church, which we were good friends with the children's pastor and his wife, who would also watch my son some, so he was really familiar with her. I swear, I saw my husband carrying Bruce out. And then he comes back, and I'm like, where's Bruce? He's like, I don't know, where's Bruce? And I'm like, oh, you're funny, you took him. Becky's got him, right? And, I mean, he was freaking out. I never did freak out, because I thought he was just pulling my leg the whole time. Until I started getting a little worried, so then I just marched out there, and there he was. What had happened was he had followed Ben out, and when Ben turned, he came in, and Ben just missed him coming in. So he was there the whole time. But the freak out that I saw in my husband's eyes that made me nervous to go check, because I knew he was pulling my leg the whole time. I just can't imagine, because they were days away from Jerusalem.
Right. That was 3 days.
Yeah.
That they had traveled. So that's, again, that's another 3 days back, which, let's be honest, it was probably about 2.5 days, 2 days. Like, I don't know how fast y'all would be going, but I would be walking a heck of a lot faster.
Yeah.
On the way back. And I'd probably be having in-depth conversation with the Lord. Like, you know where he is. Can you just bring it? Can you just let me know where he's at? He's your son. Can you just?
Yep.
Sorry, I lost him.
And then to be kind of, in a sense, be put in place by your, was he 12? 12-year-old son?
Yep.
Yeah.
Where did you think I was?
Hello.
I was in my father's house. I mean, but was she mad? Can you get mad?
Well, with the Messiah? I have, like, there's some conjecture that Mary would get so, like, and Joseph would also get so frustrated, because every time he was supposed to be home, like, doing chores and, you know, the regular stuff of a kid, this is before he was, you know, the adult and working as a carpenter and stuff like that, that he would always take off to go to his father's house, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the conjecture. Pure, there's no proof of that other than this incident. But that's exactly who he was. He had so much, so desire to be get the knowledge and learn all this stuff about his father that he just was gone all the time. And they were always, wouldn't you just want to, like, You're here to do your chores, young man. And, you know, that kind of a thing. So,
do as I did telling you first. Then That's you can go.
Then you can go see your other father. Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Before you go to your father's house, this needs to get done.
Yes. You need to take your other father's trash out. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you remember that whole respect your mother and father? See, I was in that. You respected me.
That's funny, but it's true. Absolutely true. I love it.
So you think about the fact she likely lost him at an early age, like the early on, not early on in their marriage. Obviously, they'd been married for a good 12 years at that point because he was 12. So, I mean, but still, they didn't, it's not like they grew old together. Unless she traveled without Joseph and that's why he dropped off a scripture. I don't know, you know, but we don't hear about him anymore. So, you know, she likely, and then even, you know, on the cross, Jesus gave
John,
his mom, basically like, this is, I want you to take care of my mom. So I don't think he would have done that if Joseph was still around.
No, it really seems like Joseph probably had passed.
Yeah. I mean, so she had that suffering. I mean, again, like I said, she was likely ridiculed and talked down about.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to watch her son die. Like, that wasn't part of the...
Yeah.
She wasn't let in on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knew what was going to happen, mm-hmm. but she just knew everyone wanted to kill him.
Yeah. She just didn't know they would succeed. Because, again, they didn't know. They didn't know what Jesus was going to... She obviously knew that she was bringing him into the world, so it might not have been how she had always thought this was going to work, right? As far as him coming in as a great warrior, as a prince, as all of these, the savior of, you know, the Jewish community. So she maybe had an inkling that maybe the scriptures had it, not scriptures, so to speak, but the Pharisees had it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that the church had it maybe a little bit wrong. Or misunderstood, you know, exactly how this is working out. But I don't think they were thinking about, or she wasn't thinking about, the stuff that he was going to have to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just can't even imagine what that would be like as a mom.
No.
You know.
I couldn't imagine it when I first watched The Passion of the Christ when I was... Mm-hmm. In college, I couldn't breathe for a good 2 hours after watching that. And I am scared for the time that The Chosen does it.
Mm.
I'm scared for that. I don't even know if my anxiety will let me watch it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of those things where you know the ending and you know that there is so much glory and there, you know, the purpose, but the journey to get there, what he had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it's good to watch because it puts it in perspective, right?
Yeah.
But I have never watched The Passion of the Christ since watching it in the theater. Nope. I haven't watched it again. Cause
one time
seeing
only.
It, yep. Seeing that on the big screen with my youth group was enough.
My husband said we're just going to have to watch it again with the boys. And I'm like, do I have to?
No.
Can you just do that? Can you take one for the team?
Yeah, no.
My mom watched it once and won't watch it again. It's like she goes, it's like Schindler's List because she had some Jewish relatives. Mm. She goes, I can't watch that movie simply because of the depiction of the horror they went through. And she goes, so I know that he died on the cross for me. And I know that he suffered greatly for me. And yes, it's probably important that I saw it at least once.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I have to go back and relive it.
Mm-mm.
Reading it sometimes has just as much impact, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Like, when you think about the things that he went through. And so think about that from the mother, the disciples' perspective, just the harshness of it all, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to experience that to understand it. In the aspect of, you don't need to keep watching and reliving it, is what I mean. We need to understand it, but I also because I'm not a parent, I can't picture... I can, but I can't picture what that feels like. I just know what it feels like, you know, with nieces and nephews and friends and family, and, you know, to lose them and to watch them suffer. And then you go, this is like a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Teeniest bit of what possibly Mary or even the suffering that Jesus had. And so it is perspective changing, but but he also wants us to find joy in the journey of being his children. Doesn't mean we have to relive it.
Yeah. I know it'll be important for my kids to watch it. And I think maybe The Chosen would probably be our best option because they're doing such a great job as far as that. And we want to start watching it again with the kids, like doing it. And I always say, well, when life slows down, and that is a tomorrow never comes type thing. But, you know, we want to have one night. Let's watch The Chosen. Let's do this. Let's walk through it again with them, because we started it with them, and then Steve and I were like, no, you guys go to bed now, time for bed, we're gonna keep watching. And then we got way ahead, and then we're like, now we don't want to go back. But now I think we stopped long enough now, I think, that we can go back and start again with the kids and not feel like we need to rush through it and say, okay, here's episode one, now let's wait, now, you know, next week let's do episode two. And it doesn't have, you know, Steve's like, oh, we should do that on Sunday. I'm like, we don't have to cram Jesus all in a Sunday. He doesn't have to always be on a Sunday or a Wednesday. I mean, I know our weeknights are the worst. You know, he has his podcast certain nights. We have this on, you know, when we all have our schedules free, you know. But I also have book club. We have women's ministry. We have soccer. You know, we all have things. You know, and so I'm like, we just need to sit down every week and say, okay, this is what we have this week. When can we fit this in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Same thing with like devotionals around the table, eating together at the same table, you know, at least a couple times a week, which is hard to do.
That's the other part I think about with Mary and family life too, right? Yes, she's there. She's there obviously birth to death, right?
Yeah.
Imagine all the times that she just got to sit at the table with her son.
Yeah, that we don't hear about,
and that's why it was so neat as my parents, even when we got older, still insisted on us, to the best of our ability, sit down at the table together a couple times a week, even when it didn't work perfectly because we were all busy and doing different, you know, like you said, sports and activities and stuff like that. And so it's not always about the quantity of time; it is about the quality of time you get with your kids, your family, your friends. We've all had crazy day today, right? And we kind of all were like, oh, something else that we have to do it. But then we get into this mode and we go, this is our privilege to get to do this. Like, and then we start talking to each other and we realize the joy of getting to do this together. And so it's always turning the junk of stuff, like the have to's into the get to's. And it just, that to me is the perspective clearer on how we share our faith. And to me, I feel like it's what a lot of the women of the Bible did, was to say, okay, I need you to learn this stuff. Like you're saying, I want to watch The Chosen with you. I want to be in Bible study with my kids. I want to do this. I want to do that. But there's also, the rush is only in the time that you have with them, but you have time with them.
Yeah.
And you can, you'll get there. I just watched my sisters go, well, my sister go through it with her kid. And she's now like, all of them are above 18, which is just crazy. And she's like, I don't even know what to do now some nights because I'm alone at home. Like, I don't even know. And I say, and she goes, but I cherish that time I had with my kids. And I think that's, gosh, think about Mary cherishing that time with, it's just crazy. It's crazy.
No, it is. I mean, you always think about, you know, everybody makes the jokes about how it would be to have Jesus as a sibling, right? But you don't ever think about what was it like having him as a son, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you had to be perfect all the time?
Yeah.
Oops, that was the cuss word.
Yeah. If you think there's a lot of parental pressure today, think about Mary.
Oh my gosh.
It's the Son of God. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, he's the chosen one. He's the savior.
Well, you can imagine, you know, a lot of tension probably in the household because you know, when Jesus, after, you know, the resurrection, when they're talking about who he came back to see, you know, he saw 500 people saw him, but it included and his brothers, you know? So they're the ones who needed to see him. So.
And two of them didn't even believe who he was.
Yeah.
Until afterwards. I don't apologize if you said that. I feel like that was a bit of a Thomas, though.
Yeah.
You know, like they didn't believe until after he resurrected.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I believe you were now. You know? not to hate on my James or anything. I'm just saying. You know, like he didn't become a believer until afterwards.
James has to make it into every podcast. Just saying.
He does. Just a little bit. Just a little bit of James.
Just the rules. Just the rules, kids.
I didn't make them. Just saying.
James who? Yeah.
Literally how we roll.
So after the misplacing of the Messiah, the next time we see her is at Jesus's first miracle at the wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so you see her kind of say, hey, they're out of wine here.
Help.
Yeah. And you know, and he's like, so what do you want me to do about it? You know, and I think it shows his love for her that he still does it, even if he says, you know, it's not my time. It's not what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, he does it.
Yeah. Well, it's respect for him. And he's also teaching while he does it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that's one of my favorite parts of The Chosen is the teaching part, like where he's like, come with me, disciples. Let's learn.
Yeah. Yep. Side note, I heard somebody say today too that Jesus was like the first of many like youth movement. He was the youth movement because all of those disciples were not in their full adulthood, right? They were young people.
Yeah. And he was 30.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a pretty
He was good youth pastor age, right?
Yeah.
Young enough yet old enough to run the youth ministry.
Still. Some would say yes, some would say no.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I do find it interesting that there's not really mention of him between the temple and then ministry starting. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like other than references to him learning the carpentry trade, you know. And things like that. And then, you know, it's the where was Joseph in this time? And, you know, a lot of conjecture says that he probably passed because there is no more record of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't mean that he left Mary, that there's no record. It means that he most likely passed. But yeah. And then think about what that means in Jesus, like grieving and, you know, caring for his mother and learning the trade that his father had done, you know, that kind of stuff. So. I think that's super interesting.
So full Liz only, Liz thoughts only. Just in a preference. I wonder if that was, he learned that, but I wonder if that's why it was so silent during that time is because he had to be the provider because he was the eldest.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So I guess maybe I was picking up what you were putting down. I was just thinking about it differently.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is that concept of, obviously he's caring for his mother and the family. But he's learning the trade because that's what sons did.
Yeah.
Back in the day, was they had to learn how to do that stuff so that they could be either the provider for their current family or when they got married.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously also the maturing, quite honestly, to get to that point of being the business, the dad of the group, I guess, or the dad of the family. Yeah.
So is that when is that when James got old enough or Jude got old enough or somebody else that we don't even know about because we don't know how many other kids they had.
Yeah.
There's so much conjecture on whether or not they were actually Mary's kids or if they were just Joseph's and she, you know, she inherited them when they got married, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's here nor there. It does not matter. It's everybody's opinion. But, you know, I think... But did Jesus have to do that? Like, because he needed to wait until one of them got old enough to take it over.
And then he could go and do his ministry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I would imagine at least Mary didn't have to care for any of the children once he started. Because she was there in most instances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was there a lot. She was there in Jerusalem. She was there in Capernaum.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't always in the forefront, but you know she was with them.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So in Luke chapter 2, so the section is going to be, it's 25 through 35, which is when Jesus was taken to the temple, and it's the prophecy of Simeon, and it, you know, and so starting in, I'm just going to start in 33, it's the end. So it says, Jesus' parents were amazed at what was being said about him. Then Simeon blessed them, and he said to Mary, the baby's mother, "This child is destined to cause many in Israel to fall and many others to rise. He has been sent as a sign from God, but many will oppose him. As a result, the deepest thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your very soul." I never, again, we read this every year, right? You always read,
yeah.
Like, we read this every year, and it's, I never thought about it like that. Like, he was like, this is going to be hard for you. This isn't going to be easy. This is not paved. This is.
Yeah. The plan's there, but it's not crystal clear.
Right. Like, you are blessed among women. Like, you are, like, you guys are, you know. He's calling, like, he's going to do amazing things, but it's going to come at a cost, right? Not just that, you know, the sword will pierce Jesus' side, but it'll her soul.
Yeah. That's, I never picked up on that before.
I didn't either until, that's why I wanted to make sure we talked about it. Cause I was like, that to me was like a
boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Mary's story always goes around Christmas time. You know, we always focus on the beginnings. That's where we have the most of her, right, is the beginning. We don't have as much of her in the end, but we know that she was there from day one to the very final day.
Uh-huh.
And then at the resurrection, like, how awesome would it still be to have that confirmation that he was exactly who you were told he was.
Yeah.
He did exactly what was needed and what you knew he would do. And all your trials, everything that you went through were worth it on that third day when that stone rolled away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe the only reason she was not at the tomb, like, she wasn't one of those women, is A, because I believe she was older. So I think maybe it was just a little bit, and I can't even imagine the grief that her body, that rocked through her body.
Oh yeah, because
especially if you think about losing, she lost her husband. She now, and you know, the other part is, did she at any point think maybe he won't have to suffer and die, just like Jesus did? Do you know what I mean? Like, Jesus had that moment with his father, who's when he said, "Not, you know, not my will, but your will be done, Lord." Right.
Right.
Mary had to be thinking that the whole time too.
Like, take this cup from me.
Yeah.
If I don't have to do it, please take it away. And how many times, I can't even imagine how many times she probably prayed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to discredit her faith or her, you know, but it's still, regardless, I believe that she would have been like, if he doesn't have to do that, please God, don't let him do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would never have been I can't believe you're going to make him do this. It's just if you could take this cup from him, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to step on you before, Keisha.
Did I say something?
I thought you were starting to say something, and then I jumped on. And sorry if I did.
I don't know. Either way, it's all good. But, you know, her story continues even after, you know, the resurrection. She's still there. And I just imagine that she really became a mother figure to all the disciples because, you know, especially the first few days, weeks, years, you know, even though they had the Holy Spirit, you know, I see her probably being a little bit of a guide to them. Mm-hmm. And I see her kind of sticking with John, you know.
Is that why John lived a full, happy life? You know, he never was, the worst that went to him, he was in prison. You know, he never.
Yeah.
Died. He didn't die a horrific death.
Yep.
I didn't think about that until just now when you were talking about that. I'm like, what? He gave her to John, and John never. I know, yeah. John was a beloved one too, you know.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
But he didn't give him to his brother. Give her to his brothers to take care of.
He they weren't believers John. Yet.
Yeah. But he knew they would be. You
That's
know.
That's true.
So.
Well, in that instance, and he also knew how that would pan out for his brothers, too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I find, like, you know, New Testament, early church history just very fascinating. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't, oh, you know, you're a believer. It's, no, you're a believer and you're going to be prosecuted and probably die for it.
Yeah, the pressure that we sometimes feel to share our faith is nothing compared to what they, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't. I mean, I know that missionaries face that still now in other areas of the world. Like, we are blessed to live where we live.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, but, and so, you know, I, the faith that the people have in the other countries to where it's literally illegal, you know, to worship Jesus is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. That he can still show up in those spots, or obviously I know he can show up, but that people also show up for him in those areas, and that, you know, when God says go, they go.
Yep.
You know, and that's the kind of faith you want to have. Because God's going to take you out of your comfort zone. You just really hope it's not. I'll be honest. I hope it's not that far out of my comfort zone. That's a pretty large leap for me. But, you know,
but he also calls us to be bold in asking those things, right?
Yeah.
He says, Lord, I'm gonna do what you asked me to do, but I am better here sometimes.
Yeah, I am much better.
Can we just do it my way?
Yeah.
It seems easier.
Right. I feel like it's safe. It's safer here. Thank you. No. I think, like I said, I think the one thing that we can always learn from Mary is the yes, Lord. You know, the mm-hmm. you know, I will, it's literally the, may it be done to me according to your word. You know, that's the kind of answer that we need to give every time we hear the Lord's voice.
Yep.
Yep.
Because none of us are going to be asked to do what she did.
Yeah. Yeah. We know we don't have to. That's been done. We don't have to say yes to that. But, you know, it can be just as simple as saying yes to pray for someone. Mm-hmm. You know, I was at a patient's house. I do home health. And one of my sons had done something, and I was just whining about it. Literally just whining about it. And before I left, the caregiver was like, I've been trying to listen to the Lord more, and the Lord's telling me to pray for you, so I'm going to pray for you, okay? And she did. Before I walked out, she prayed for me, and that meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. It really did, so.
It's the simplest of things sometimes that I think is also probably what Mary did for Joseph. And like you said, the other disciples, and just that constant presence in their life and in the beginning of his ministry to help see it to... Because it was part of her journey, too. I mean, she was, yes, she was the mother, and that was her, obviously a big part of what she did, was, you know, giving birth to him, but also to sustain and see him through to that point that the Lord said, this is what needs to happen, till God said, this is what needs to happen. And again, then it doesn't talk a lot about it either, because it kind of jumps right into church and, you know, church forming and stuff like that. But I also wonder how she cared for the disciples.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the example that we have, is how we care for each other. And in the times of trial, we care for each other. In the times of joy, we care for each other. In the times of being stretched, not being stretched, you know, I mean, all those things. And not just Mary, but several women in the Bible give us that example and show us that part of the journey. A bunch of the Marys do.
Yeah. a bunch of those seven.
Yeah.
Mary, Miriam.
Yeah.
Oh, Mary.
Well, I think that about wraps up Mary, unless you guys have anything else. No? So I think it's always good to give us. Again, we go through the women because it's important, because that's who we learn by. Like, we learn from the women in the Bible, because if they're listed, there's a reason.
Yeah.
Some are nameless, some aren't, but there's always a reason that a woman is listed, and it means something. And obviously, Mary means something. There's a significant... Mary had a very significant role.
Yep.
You know, and she is to be respected. She's to be revered. She's to be... you know, sought after as an example for us, for not just women, but even men, like, to be able to, like, her faith is large. You know, she had a huge faith. She had a great knowledge. She was humble. You know, she was wise and humble. She was everything that, you know, she was the epitome of, you know, Christ-like before
we knew what Christ was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, she was
before it was written about.
Exactly. She was a great example. So I think I'm glad that we were able to sit down here for, you know, this episode, even though, like I said, it's out of the line of where women showing up in the Bible, but it was just felt right to go through her for this season.
Yep.
So yeah, that's it, and we will see everybody next year.
That's crazy. Happy New Year. No, I'm just kidding.
We want to thank you all for listening to the Mustard Seed Podcast and for joining us on this journey that God laid on our hearts. I know it's hard to feel connected when we are on this side of the microphone, so we wanted to make sure that you knew that you could connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at the Mustard Seed Podcast. Our Facebook group is a community. We share funny memes, Bible verses, and just life. You can reach out however you feel comfortable. We want to build the community that we advocate for on this podcast, the Come As You Are. Our table will never be too crowded and cannot get too big. You belong here, and we want to connect with you.